Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 187 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. On today's episode, I chat with the lovely Fiona Heifer from Sansorium. And today, we are talking all things non-alcoholic. We're talking about non-alcoholic alternatives. We are talking about why they are important, the trends coming in non-alcoholic alternatives. And we are talking about the difference between low and no alcohol. And Fiona gives us a little bit of an education behind non-alcoholic wines and how you can reap the benefits, which ones to drink, and when. This is such a fantastic episode. Let's get into it. Fiona, it's been a year. It's been a year since you've been on the podcast. What a wild ride, man.
I know. I can't believe it. We've celebrated our anniversary. Yeah. And it's like our friendship anniversary too, which is
yes,
so cool.
It is our friendship anniversary. Oh my God. Absolutely. For those of you who don't know who Fiona is, she has been on the podcast before. She is the co-founder of Sansorium, a unbelievable online marketplace for non-alcoholic alternatives. We're not going to go kind of into like your backstory, I don't think, because we have so much more to talk about in terms of like mm-hmm. non-alcoholic goodness. Mm-hmm. So if you're listening to this and you want to hear Fiona's personal relationship with alcohol and why and how she started Sansorium, I strongly suggest going and listening to that episode. But this episode, it's been a year. It's been a wild ride since we last met and have you been on the podcast, and so much has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. much.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about what has changed in a year. I mean, we've done an event together.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We've done an event together. We've done probably Sansorium's really done over 50 events since we last spoke, maybe more. We've done pop-ups, small, medium, large across different cities in BC. And I think what we have noticed is the change in socialization and really how people are coming together and how people are changing their relationships with things around them, be it their home life, their work life, their friendships, their life partnerships, and certainly their wellness. So
yes,
I've noticed from last time that we spoke, because it was this time last year, we were about to go into another lockdown.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the third or the fourth one at that point. So I think that was another time when people were, you know, the magnifying glass was on what isolation felt like and how we take mm-hmm. care of ourselves in isolation. So a lot of people are coming out this year, and what I saw and what we saw as a company in these pop-ups is people going, I realize that I turn to alcohol a lot when I'm either bored or lonely or anxious, or just feel like I have nothing to do with myself. It's like an automatic reach into the fridge or into the cupboard to pull out something to drink.
Yeah.
And it's not making me feel better. It's not solving the loneliness, making me feel less bored, making me feel more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been talking a lot with people about how big alcohol, and I say big alcohol because it is a huge multi-billion-dollar industry.
Right. Yeah.
How it's fooled you into thinking that you're missing something without it, that you're not enough alone mm-hmm. by yourself, that you're not fun enough, you're not comfortable enough, you're not social enough, mm. you're not joyful enough, and that reaching for it and grabbing for it is the solution. It's really, yeah. they've really convinced us of this.
Yeah, it's like so a fun factor too, yeah, right? Like
yeah.
everyone is so concerned about the fun factor. Like they yeah. put so much pressure on, okay, well, I need to be fun. I need to have fun. This is when I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to do it. It's like, fun is not structured like that. Mm-hmm. That is like the opposite of fun, really.
Mm-hmm. like, totally.
If we need to plan and force fun, I, honey, you got another thing coming. I don't think it's that fun.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Let's add some spontaneity to life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. definitely. And it's a lot of yeah. pressure, you know, like mm-hmm. I think we're all so stressed. We're always like working harder, better, faster, stronger. We're, you know, we're always propelled forward and okay, well, we need to schedule in time to have fun now. Like mm-hmm. this is, we got a window. This is when we can get wild. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Go.
Like,
and then relying on alcohol.
Yeah.
Relying only on alcohol to be the fun.
Yeah. And to get you there.
To get you there.
Like you have to be there now. You have to be there quicker. You know, you only have this small window of time. Maybe the babysitter is only available for this amount of time on this day. Shit.
Yeah, I get it. I really get it. I have a lot of yeah. compassion for that perspective. It's hard. Yeah.
It's really hard. Mm-hmm. And then like also add into like, okay, well, we have to have fun and we need to connect and we mm-hmm. need to have like deep, meaningful relationships. Mm-hmm. It's like all these layers of like pressure.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And that's certainly what happened. That's definitely what happened. It put us all into like a pressure cooker.
Yeah.
Being isolated, being forced to be physically distanced from one another yeah. made those moments of connection so much more valuable and heightened and precious, yep. really.
Yeah.
So I think people turned to an overindulgence in some ways. And
totally.
I saw this year people going, oh, like coming up for air, like taking a little bit of a stock of where they were at.
Yeah.
And I would say this year with the people that we're interacting with, they're finding us a lot easier. They're finding us a lot faster.
Yeah.
We're not having to do tons of marketing to attract people to us.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting as a business.
Yeah.
feels
I wonder
great
why.
To be
do you have any
people.
Idea why?
Well, there's definitely a collective conversation happening. So yeah. before, I would say a year ago, we were introducing people to the idea that sure. you might drink less.
Sure.
And now people are telling us that they're drinking less and we're introducing them to the products that they could drink instead.
Mm.
So I say people aren't drinking less. They're just drinking something different. And I'm
trying to
take back the word drinking, because drinking should not be synonymous with alcohol. It should just yeah. be synonymous with indulging in a beverage of choice that's pleasurable. Yeah,
totally.
And that looks like a lot of things. So I still have people that say, oh, I've never heard of alcohol-free wine or aperitifs or, you know, these euphorics, but mm-hmm. I'm very open to it because I'm drinking less alcohol.
Interesting. That's mm-hmm. so cool. Yeah, I definitely noticed, you know, I've said this before, we're not in the business of like trying to convert people. You know, I think it's really important to just have open conversations and letting people know that there is an option. There is different ways to feel better and take care of yourself that don't involve, you know, something that's essentially like kind of toxic.
Mm-hmm.
Not only to your health, but like also to your livelihood, your relationships, your spiritual relationship with yourself, like just relationships in general.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely classed in the world as the, it's a group 1, type 1 carcinogen. So
yep.
kind of toxic is toxic. But that's just like spitting facts. I think there's a lot of things we do that are toxic, that we continue to do. And there's a lot of mixed messages out there. So across, you know, if you look at the food industry, it's very hard to determine what is good for your body and what isn't, when there's literally very strong research on both ends of the spectrum. This is less so of an issue in the world of alcohol, but for a long time, doctors and professionals in sort of in the health and wellness parts of government were saying different things about alcohol. So about, I would say 10 years ago, we had kind of like a suggestion of the amount of alcohol that you could take to kind of be in a quote unquote healthy category.
Yeah.
And it was, let's say, about 10 to 15 drinks a week. And that, and drinks not being 12 ounce pints, but like a serving, a real serving, like a proper 5 ounce glass of wine or a shot in a cocktail, not doing doubles and triples and et cetera, but real servings.
Yeah. Like the grandiose drinks that we've come up with.
Yes.
To make.
And that we've normalized. Normalized.
Yes.
So today, I don't know if you saw, but recently they changed their guidelines, the health guidelines around alcohol intake. And to be in a low risk category towards your health, it's two drinks per week is the suggestion.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a huge decrease.
Yeah. And more, and to be in the high risk is 7 or more drinks a week.
Wow.
So that's half of what they were suggesting 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that will only get you in the high risk category.
Right.
So they're really, what I'm seeing from that is putting 2 on the marker is just saying go at your own risk. I don't think they would actually suggest any.
Yeah.
And I don't know doctors that are recommending any alcohol anymore at all. I don't think they can say that in good faith. Yeah.
No, definitely. Like, remember the old, like, the old saying, like, oh, you know, you need a glass of wine a night for your heart.
Yeah.
Or like heart for your health. Blood pressure, or like, no, absolutely not. I don't know who came up with that, who decided that was okay, but yeah, no, it's just, it's not. It's definitely.
Well, I think that there probably was, and there is, there's good reason for the way that alcohol initially helps you downgrade your stress levels, right? It, it does do that, has an initial suppressant activity, and you feel more relaxed. So yeah, I can imagine blood pressure going down, but what's interesting about the research now around the antioxidant benefits that come from particularly red wine is that they're just not as bioavailable because of the presence of alcohol, like the actual molecule of alcohol. When your body ingests any kind of beverage with alcohol, with ethanol, it prioritizes the detoxification of the alcohol first before it takes any nutritional benefit. So even if you're drinking with a super healthy meal, you're not actually going to start getting any of those nutrients from the food because it's starting to get rid of the alcohol first. That's the priority, that let's take care of the body. Let's detox that first. And then we'll look at nutrient values. So I always look at a glass of alcoholic red wine and go, yes, there's, you know, this many, this is a measurement of antioxidants in the wine, but it's not really taking that as a priority first. It's looking at the alcohol. Yeah. So when there's no alcohol present, it's taking the full antioxidant benefit first, which is why I think non-alcoholic red wine is better for you.
Yeah, of course. Well, it doesn't have to, like, your body's literally trying to like mediate the alcohol. It's like, okay, let's cancel this out so we can get to work on the good stuff. Mm-hmm. With non-alcoholic stuff, you don't have to, you completely take that stuff away.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that with non-alcoholic wine.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Is that just with red?
So red wine has more antioxidants present. in them. It's called the, it's like the word is umal. It's like a abbreviation for the amount of antioxidants in the grape. So different grape varietals will have more than others.
Okay.
Typically the redder the grape, the richer the antioxidants. And that's, you know, that's what I'm seeing across different wines, but the levels are higher in red than they are in white for sure.
Cool. So I want to talk about why non-alcoholic alternatives. You know, you got a lot of people saying like, oh my God, why bother? It doesn't even have alcohol. You know, I get it. But like, what are you seeing? Like, how are you seeing in the community how non-alcoholic products are benefiting the community and people who are your customers? What are you seeing out there?
So I've been thinking about the way we describe non-alcoholic products for a while now.
Yeah.
And we often talk about them as the option.
Okay.
And I actually think this is the mainstream. I think that alcohol is going to be the option in the future. And we can start looking at non-alcoholic beverages as the starting point, and then choosing if you want to pepper in a little bit of alcohol on your own, on your, with your own choice at some point in the evening or the day or the weekend. I truly believe that we're going to change the game.
Yeah.
When people start to realize how much better they feel when they're not drinking alcohol so consistently.
Yeah.
I think that seeing non-alcoholic wine, especially on menus at restaurants, is also really changing the narrative from the industry side. So we just started, we just had a wine and an aperitif land on the menu at St. Lawrence, which is a a newly Michelin starred restaurant in Vancouver.
Wow.
And they're doing really well as a restaurant, and they wanted to have a non-alcoholic wine. And so we happened to meet at the right time.
Yeah.
And now this wine is on the menu and it's flying. He told me that he can't keep it. Yeah. He had to just put in a huge order again. So it's doing really well. Yeah. Yeah. And I will say what I love about St. Lawrence is as a culture, JC, the head chef, he decided we're not going to be an alcohol drinking team. We don't drink alcohol on the job. You're welcome to after hours or after when you leave, you go home or you go on the weekend. But at work, we don't drink before or after shift or during. And I think that is a huge industry shift because I've been in the industry for a long time myself.
Yeah.
You sit after work, you sit at the bar, you down a beer or you know, a little nightcap or a glass of wine to try and calm down after the rush of an evening.
Sure.
And that might be at 2 in the morning.
Oof.
And how derailing. Your sleep is already interrupted because you're working till 2 in the morning, but then you drink on top of that.
Yeah.
And you do that every night. You do that every night. Yeah. So I think they're very progressive in that stance.
Yeah.
And now adding non-alcoholic wine to their menu and saying, we believe we've tasted this is premium. We really enjoy the experience of it. And we want our customers to enjoy it too. That's just giving so much permission to people. So much permission.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I love that. What are those conversations? Because you know, you do pop-ups, you do have like an online store, but what are those conversations like when you approach restaurants? Because that's a huge pain point for customers, right? Like going out for dinner, socializing with friends, what is it like, or what does it take to get a non-alcoholic product on someone's menu?
I mean, first and foremost, it will always be about quality.
Sure.
And they are not going to bring anything in that they wouldn't drink themselves or eat themselves. They don't have the space. They don't have the time. Mm-hmm. They don't have the interest to go about anything that doesn't live up to any kind of quality standard that they have at their space. So with conversations, usually they'll have some interest to begin with. I've done a couple of really cold meetings where I approached them. They were, you know, they allowed me to come in.
Okay.
And And they didn't see the need because they just didn't have the customer asking for it.
Sure.
Or they themselves were very much interested in alcohol and really hadn't made any change with that relationship. So they didn't see the need. And those conversations ended there.
Yeah, definitely.
They ended there, even though, and I will say a couple places, they would say, oh yeah, our head bartender is sober, or my co-founder is sober. Or
really?
We have people that come in for weddings and they want non-alcoholic wine. Even just a few examples like that have not influenced them enough, but it's I believe it's their own personal relationship and their connection to the profiteering off of alcohol that survives their business, which I totally understand.
Right.
So yeah, they're just not there yet. But places that that have an awareness of the collective shift around alcohol are very keen. You know, the second we reach out, they respond or they reach out to us and we're in and having a great tasting and they can't, you know, what else do you have? What else do you have? What's this? Can you bring in this? Can we try that?
Yeah.
So conversations are certainly a lot easier.
For sure.
But oh yeah, my mom recently went to a tasting in a certain part of town that if you live in Vancouver, you'd understand why. Yale Town.
Oh. Okay.
And
that's a tough crowd.
And it was a tough crowd because again, it's like that's the conversation happening there. It's really focused and centering around alcohol.
Yeah.
And the bartenders, the head manager was like super interested, but the bartenders were like scoffing and like just not there. So
right.
You know, that's fine. Everyone's on their own path of interest and receptivity. We're not there again, like you said, to convert anybody. We're there to show you how premium the market is. And that was our goal, was to bring really high quality product that had craft and had story, just like the alcoholic side did, because I don't believe you should lose any of that when you take out alcohol, because alcohol is not the story. It's the winemaker. It's the winemaker's passion. It's the story. It's the art of the product, the design of the bottle. It's all that. And the flavor and the taste and the way it connects with food. It's all of that. We shouldn't lose that just because we took out alcohol.
No.
And that's why I think it does so well.
Well, even you describing that, I'm like, yeah, you're right. Like, it's one little ingredient that we put so much weight on, right? Like, we've put so much value. We've almost put it on a pedestal. And so it's kind of, I can see how it would be almost like undoing, like an undoing of why do we value alcohol so much? When there's so much craft and like history into creating a product, just in general.
Well, that leads to the question that you asked earlier when someone says, what's the point?
Yeah.
Well, literally I could take all the labels off and just pass anything in a glass to you and you would drink it, because it's not about the story for you. It's not about engaging with other people. It's not about the environment and the space that you're in. It's that you have decided that, or you have a relationship to alcohol that says you need it, and that you need it to feel calm. You need it to feel comfortable. You need it to feel social. You need it to connect with somebody. You need it to have fun and to feel joyful.
Sure.
And whether that's on your own or that's been told to you and you've adopted that as your own, that's the point for you. That's the point.
Gotcha. I want to talk about price point. Because with all this craft and all this, you know, ingenuity, I guess, like it comes at a price. How do you, I guess with that conversation, people always compare non-alcoholic stuff to alcoholic stuff. And along with that comes price. It just does. How do you navigate that? Or what do you say to that?
So as a business, we always try and have a collection of price points so that no one has, you know, there's no barrier for anybody that's a little more price conscious or needs to be.
Sure.
The conversation about someone that's not looking at price, but is looking at value for what they're getting is really, you know, it takes more to produce an all-alcoholic wine. or mm-hmm. non-alcoholic spirit. It does. It's easy actually to just to ferment a bunch of grapes and let it go up to 12 to 13% and age it and bottle it and send it off.
Call it a day.
Call it a day.
Yeah.
But to add an extra step, a quite complex step where you take out the molecule that holds the majority of the flavor, the majority of the aromatics, the majority of the body, and figure out how to preserve that and to mm-hmm. keep that varietal integrity, that's hard and it's expensive.
Yeah.
And you could just light the whole thing on fire and take it out and then pass me a glass of watery juice.
Oh, no.
You totally could. But hello, that's not it.
Yeah, and definitely not it.
That's not it.
And that's why non-alcoholic wine in particular gets a bad rap.
That's why it gets a bad rap, because that's all they had for a long time.
Sure.
And now there's three or four different processes, highly innovative processes that will keep the integrity of the wine, and particularly the varietal of the wine, and take out the ethanol. But that is one of our brands that we carry invested $4 million in the technology to de-alkalize their wines. So it's very expensive. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want their business to be returned in a way. I want them to get the value for their investment. And that means not cutting them and price cutting them down to nothing just because there's no alcohol. In fact, I would say because there's no alcohol, we should be paying this price. Thank goodness it's been taken out.
Yeah. We're doing you a service.
Yeah. It's doing us a favor, and it's more expensive. It's very, very similar to the vegan food movement.
Sure.
And so when you looked at someone that crafted dairy-free cheese for all the folks that can't ingest dairy or choose not to ingest dairy, dairy-free cheese used to be so expensive.
Yes.
I know from experience. Still is in many cases.
Yeah.
But the ingredients and the craft and the length of time it took to create that product, yes, it was $17 for a reason.
Yeah.
Now it's coming down, and we've got lots of different alternative brands that have been created where we can probably have a nice range of affordability. But wine and alcohol-free spirits are the same. Sometimes it took Liars 3 years to craft their initial small collection of alcohol-free spirits. It's a lot of work.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I always just say that's depends on how much you value this product. And I don't, at pop-ups, at our big pop-ups, we have so many products, we do put prices, but at my small ones, like the one that you just came to,
no prices
on the outside of products.
Okay.
Taste it when you love it and you connect with the reason behind why you would drink this, and you think of the times and places that you'd want to drink this.
Yeah.
$21 is like, drop in the bucket for the amount of value that I see this has.
Absolutely. I love that. And I love that you do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're not just selling a product, you're selling a feeling.
Yeah.
Right. You're selling a moment. It's an opportunity to connect. It's so much bigger than just a bottle of non-alcoholic wine.
It is. It's so much bigger. It's the same for someone that's purchasing alcohol, actually. They are trying to create an experience.
Sure.
Otherwise they would just see it as a liquid. But it does hold a lot of meaning. I mean, food and beverage is the most universal ritual from the beginning of time, across any culture, across any background of person, any style of living, food and beverage is the center. Mm-hmm. And it's how we start all of our rituals of connection. There's always some sort of offering or exchange.
Mm.
And we're not about to get rid of that. We're not here to change that. We're here to actually, I think, enhance it.
Yeah.
Because if it is about actually connecting with people, if it's just the vehicle for connection,
sure,
then I do personally want to be the most present for that opportunity for connection. I don't want to have anything getting in the way of me being able to fully engage with somebody or myself in an experience.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Can we talk about just a different, low and no some terminologies mm-hmm. here. There's yes. a lot of confusion going around about, you know, percentages, like the small percentages of alcohol in non-alcoholic products, which seems like, well, what? It's so mm-hmm. confusing, right? Fiona, mm-hmm. could you shine a little light on what the difference is between low and a no alcohol product?
Mm-hmm. So global standards for a non-alcoholic product are 0.5% and under.
Okay.
The low category, some people might call 5%, the 0.5% low, because okay. they are looking for a fully zero. So low sure, might sure, be sure. 0.5, but I would say 0.5 is anything above, or the low category is anything above 0.5% and up.
Okay.
So you're seeing low alcohol wines right now in the mm-hmm. liquor stores. They're sitting around 5% and 8%.
Okay. As opposed to like 12, the regular is like 12%, right?
Right. 12 to 15.
Okay. Yep.
The low alcohol beers are available now. So that's 2.5%, 3%, mm-hmm. cutting in half what they normally are, around 5.
Yeah.
You're seeing a small, but I would say present category of low alcohol spirits.
Okay.
Mostly the ones I find are in the States right now.
Okay.
So that would be like a low alcohol gin mm-hmm. sitting at 18% instead of 40.
Mm-hmm.
And then some other sort of concoctions, aperitifs that are in the low alcohol category, but okay. not a lot. Spirits okay. are not, that's not super common.
Yeah.
I think what's confusing is to some people, 0.5% is still a presence of alcohol.
Yeah.
And just that number kind of gives people a little bit of a question mark around what's safe for them if they really want to be fully alcohol free.
Mm-hmm.
But what I always say is, and I know you get lots of questions on your stories, and I know you answer this for people all the time, but
yeah,
your body will detox 0.5% alcohol way faster than you'll ever feel the effects
yeah.
of toxicity.
Yeah.
And at the same time, in our everyday pantry, we have lots of things that are 0.5% or higher.
Yeah.
That we don't know about.
That's not even labeled.
That's not even labeled.
Yeah.
So I know we've laughed before at the mystery of kombucha and
yes.
what alcohol level was kombucha for a long time before it yeah. probably got regulated, right?
Yeah. The government doesn't want you getting a free ride. Doesn't want you,
no.
Doesn't want you getting drunk for cheaper. They're stepping in.
That's right. That's right. No free rides here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think kombucha in the past when it was first being made was well above 0.5%.
Yes.
Because people were feeling a little bit woozy on kombucha.
Yeah.
But a ripe banana, like yes. a super overripe banana, will be over 0.5%. Like a bread roll, like a dinner roll, like yeah. sourdough. Like,
isn't some sourdoughs like pretty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Your gut has more than 0.5% in it right now. It's just there's a lot of different foods out there.
Yeah.
A lot of different things that are based in alcohol too, like extracts that you might be using for baking and cooking. Those mm-hmm. will be alcoholic, but you're using so little, so it doesn't really, again, you won't feel the effects. So yeah. it's really a personal choice, I think.
Definitely.
Some people just don't want the idea of there being any kind of alcohol in something because there is a very real potential for a placebo effect.
Sure.
And that could cascade into other things for that person, or they just don't like the feeling of any kind of tipsiness or state change or drunkenness.
Yep.
And so I've certainly had a couple of non-alcoholic beers before. Okay. And gone, feel a little weak in the knees.
Really?
I pounded a couple of nannies a few months ago and I was like, yeah. okay, those are definitely non-alcoholic beers, but it's the
Whoa.
Memory, my body's memory of what it feels like to drink yeah. alcohol going into action right away. The smell, the taste,
yeah.
it all stimulated my olfactory system to tell my body, hey, you know what to do when this happens.
Yeah, get wild, get loose.
Get loose, right? And same happens sometimes with red wine. I'll feel it in my chest a little bit, depending on how much I've drank. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like you got that muscle memory.
It's a muscle memory. And for beer, it's also hops. Hops are naturally sedative. So okay. I probably just had quite a lot quickly and was getting that relaxation, that natural relaxation. And I know that, so I'm not afraid of it. But again, that might be a slippery slope for someone who's decidedly in recovery and they're not looking for any kind of state change. That might be too much for them.
Yeah, 100% agree. I mean, yeah, you also have to check your intention behind drinking these products, right? Mm-hmm. Like if our intention is still to like escape or get that buzz or get that kind of high, probably not a good idea. Mm-hmm. Regardless of the alcohol content or it being no alcohol, but just that trigger of like what that means and represents to you. Cause you could literally, you know, mouthwash has more alcohol. If we're going to get, you know, really granular with it, like.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's our intention.
I have a couple of friends who've come out of AA many, many years ago or still in it. And what they tell me is it's kind of about the type of drink it is. So spirits and aperitifs and euphorics, those like mixed drinks, not a problem for me. Don't even show me wine. I can't even go close to it. Just the smell of it brings back bad memories.
Yeah.
So it's vertical by vertical. They're not necessarily across the board. So I would say for anyone that's curious about a non-alcoholic drink, go somewhere where you haven't gone before. Try a mixed, like a mixed Aperol spritz if you've never had one before. It's a very unique taste. And if you never tried one, it might not be a trigger for you. It might just be something that you learn to love. But wine might be a trigger, and it's just okay, just stay away from that. So vertical by vertical. Yeah.
Love it. Love it. Fiona, what do you have going on or coming up for the holiday season? I know you guys are so busy and you're always popping up everywhere around town. What could you tell us what you got going on deck this weekend, or where we can find updates of where you're going to be next?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited to tell your community that we are now North America wide. So you can ship into the States all across, except for Hawaii. I'm so sorry, Hawaii. It's just a little expensive right now, but I know you've got lots of folks down there. So we're excited that we can serve them as well.
Yes.
We are participating in a holiday sale starting this weekend. It's actually live right now, so you can shop till next Monday. And we've curated different product sets that we think are really great for the holidays. So you might want to pick up a red set or a wine set. You might want to pick up some spirits if you're hosting and you want to make up some cocktails for people. We've got a margarita, a bourbon sour, we've got a sangria. So we've curated the products together for you, so it's easy shopping, and they're on sale until the 29th. So you can just pick them up and take them home. And we do free shipping over $150 across the border, so you can do that. We are in person in Surrey this weekend at Mainland Markets. For anyone that's out in the outer parts, the greater part of Vancouver, if you want to come out there, that'll be really fun. There's always really great vendors at those markets. And then follow us on social. We always update our bio to say where we're going to be next.
Okay.
And we do. We have a pop-up every week until Christmas. So you have lots of opportunity. We're essentially a moving store.
Yeah, you are.
And even the week of Christmas, even till Boxing Day, we'll be up at Sage Natural Wellness between West 4th and Park Royal. So you can come pick up some sparkling wine for the holidays, even on Boxing Day. Or sorry, Christmas Eve.
There is no excuse.
I'm gonna be chilling. Yeah. I'll be chilling on Boxing Day, but
Yes.
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Shop until the till you drop.
I love it. Oh my gosh. And Fiona, can you give us your website and your handle on Instagram so we can stay in touch with you?
Yeah, so both are Sansorium, Sansorium.com or __ on Instagram. They're both very active places to find us. And you can always DM us if you're looking for product or you want to know where you can find us, and we'll respond there.
Perfect. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for this lovely, lovely chat and sharing your experience and knowledge with us. I love you.
I love you too.
Happy 1 year friendship anniversary.
Friendiversary.
Yeah, friendiversary.
I absolutely love having Fiona on and chatting to her about non-alcoholic products and just the whole landscape of being sober or booze-free or however you choose to identify. I love how she looks at it, and I love how she articulates and just how she feels about the movement. She's so wonderful. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please make sure to rate, subscribe. We love to hear your feedback about the podcast. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at A Sober Girls Guide. And don't forget to check out asobergirlsguide.com, our new fourth edition, 4 years in a row, of The Ultimate Guide to Non-Alcoholic Alternatives is on the blog now. Get there and find your new favorite non-alcoholic beverage just in time for the holidays. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.